general public, something else, and what's happening next on Tom and Hank Talk About It All.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Hank. You sound so clear.
You sound very clear as well.
Well, I am transparent.
Did you say queer or clear?
I said queer to you. You sound very queer. Strange.
What do gay horses...
Unusual.
What do gay horses eat?
I was going to say... I don't know.
Hey.
I'll need evidence of that.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, everyone. So if you're hearing us right now, you are in luck because mere moments ago, we had a disaster here at Binks and Headland Incorporated Amalgamated Studios.
I put it out of my mind. It was literally 8 minutes ago.
Here on the 7th floor of 30 Rockefeller Center.
Amalgamated.
Well, I noticed something. You know, we've been recording at Hank's place lately, and the acoustics just seem a little bit different lately. And then I was like tapping on it. We have these boxes that we use to sort of raise up the microphones. I'm using technical terms, so please, I'll slow down if anybody needs me to.
Boxes, B-O-X-E-S.
The box thing with the microphone thingies with the thing that screws onto the top. And then so I was tapping on it and I realized, I was like, damn, it's like a drum. It's like a hollow plastic box that these are sitting on. This is like creating a terrible echo.
For 3 years. Almost 3 years.
And then I was like, man, maybe we should put some like kind of like a towel or something under here. And then I put the towel in and it just muffled the sound.
It just muffled it.
And now you can hear a pin drop.
Muffle Nuffin.
Bing.
Wait, isn't there a book called Smuffle Nuffle Puffin?
The Nuffle Monster? Niffle Bunny.
Niffle Bunny. Nuffle Bunny.
Nuffle Bunny.
Knuffle yeah. Bunny.
You know what?
But I digress. So we were putting towels under us and
to absorb the sound.
To put it on this plastic box.
For a better listener experience.
Yeah, so we
towels.
Tom did his, and then I sat down over on my side, and he politely lifted my little microphone thing up.
Politely isn't even the word. It was more like with purpose.
It was.
And carefully.
It was very carefully. And I saw you go in carefully and lift it up so we didn't tug any wires or do anything. And then I put... Now, wait, we haven't talked about this. So what really happened? Then I put the towel under. Did I knock the glass?
You did.
I did?
Yes, you did. It hit the glass. But the stupid thing about it...
Oh, my God!
...is that we had what they call in the film biz, we had a foreshadowing moment. Where the glass was sitting in exactly the same spot where it had originally fallen, where it had almost fallen 15 minutes before.
Oh, yes.
Because it was placed in between my sunglasses.
What's that horror movie where it's like if you just escape death, then you're going to get killed anyway? Final Destination.
I was going to say Johnny Depp, but I don't know.
Final Destination. That's exactly what it was. We escaped that thing, but the glass had to fall.
Yeah.
It was its destiny to fall.
It's like the ring in Lord of the Rings. It's like the ring the ring will fucking find the way. Like you can drop it in the middle of the ocean, but there's going to be some fucking asshole hobbit swimming around going, I got to have the ring. You know what? Get off my ass, Hobbit.
If everyone could get off my ass, that would be great. Now, here's the problem with that. So we did it. That happened. So it fell onto our Focusrite, which is our, like, mixer that we use.
It's our essential piece of equipment.
Yes. Besides the microphones, we need this thing to plug the microphones into.
And our handsomeness.
And that just generates power for most of the Bay Area. But so this thing was there. And now that I remember it, it did, like... It was like a slow motion once someone hit that glass. We don't know quite who yet.
We also took a minute to like register that water was pouring.
Well, it took a second, but then it really was like, I did see it like the waves go. And I saw the wave like crest and hit the mixer. And Tom, once again, there's moments in my life where Tom really is like, shows this other part of him. Like, he's always just like a strong, like, I can do this, Mr. Fix-It guy. Something happened a few days ago where I was like, well, we should call this guy who's an electrician. And he looked at me and he goes, are you fucking kidding me?
Couldn't fix the door lock at work, though. Boy, that pissed me off.
He said, I'll do this. And he did. So he's always one of those guys. But it was a moment where he grabbed every mic line, every power cord out of that box, like he was like a, I don't even know.
Field stripping an AR-15 at night with the blindfold.
It just went off. Everything just got disconnected very quickly. Now, I will also say one other time that this happened was when we were going to see White Lies, a band that Tom loved, and then he got me into. We went to go see White Lies, and we had a parking spot and I was about to back into it, and a guy turned from the other lane.
Don't do that.
Nose in to get the spot. Like, literally, my basement was flooded. Like, I was so turned on because Tom was like, nope, you are. He leaned out of that car door and I was like, oh, look at this guy.
Well, did I mention a couple weeks ago how you had to, like, prevent me from getting out of the car to kill the guy in the McDonald's parking lot who threw his garbage out?
No, after we recorded, we went and splurged and got McDonald's, and you were incensed.
I was enraged. I was like, I mean, I was enraged. I and was like,
I should have been.
I opened the door and I was like, oh, no. And then I was like, well, we need to get this food ordered, and why kill someone right now?
No.
And then I wasn't going to kill him. You know what I was going to do? I was just going to pick up the trash and I was going to smash their window and throw the trash back in and go, you dropped this. You're welcome.
Hello.
Hi, it's me again.
Hello. I'm so sorry to bother you. But this rapper.
Can you roll your window down for a second? Here, because your fucking soda's on the ground, you fuckhead.
Well, we left that McDonald's, which we've deemed the bag McDonald's forever. But I don't know why we just didn't go to the good McDonald's.
It's the beach Donald's, that's why.
Yeah, beach Donald's.
It's like Ico. It's like there's sand in the burgers.
Ico.
I mean, okay, first of all, I actually dismantled that Big Mac, that double quarter cheeser, whatever it's called.
Okay.
The double cheeser.
I dated him once.
Boy, I'll never order a double cheeser again. So I took that thing apart, like, just to look at it and just to get an idea of what I was dealing with, what I was ingesting in my body. And I realized all it really is, you know, those sausages that we just ate? It's like that, but like with half the moisture. It was like the width of like two pieces of box board taped together, and then, but have they changed in taste?
No, it's been consistent ever since. I think it might be a little more salty now, or maybe I'm older and taking the salt differently, but no, it's the same exact flavor, and it's an assuring, even though you know it's trash, it's still like a, like a warm beef hug. Sending beef hugs. Wish you were here.
You know, that's the thing that really sucks about COVID is you can't beef hug people. I used to love running up to my friends, giving them a big beef hug.
And you know, I like to stand on the corner with that sign that says "Free beef hugs."
But somebody misread it and thought it said beef Uggs, and so they brought a pair of Uggs that were like made out of steak.
Slippery yet nice.
Make sure you cook before wearing.
It forms to my foot. Oh man. All right. Well, I want to bring up something that is sad, yet something that we can also, someone that we can also celebrate. So this last Monday, Chadwick Boseman, you called me into your office and said Chadwick Boseman has passed away. And after that initial release of him passing away, then kind of came out all of these all of these things about his illness and how long he's had it and how long he has worked with it while being sick and going through really tough times while making these films, but making them, co-workers didn't know. So I want to talk just a little bit about Chadwick Boseman. He was just 43 years old, born in 1976, and passed away this past Monday, August 28th, 2020. He was born and raised in South Carolina, and he studied directing at Howard University. And the interesting, so Howard University often has people, professors, who we know, right? They're actors. And
I know?
Sure.
Okay.
Not personally, but who go and are professors there. And Felicia Rashad, from Broadway fame and, of course, The Cosby Show, and many, many other things. She was a professor there, and when he was a senior or a junior going into senior, he was accepted, and I want to get it correct, he was accepted. I might not have it, and I'm sorry. He was accepted into the Oxford acting program. Five or six students from Howard University were accepted to go to the UK for the summer program, but they couldn't afford it. So Felicia Rashad reached out to Denzel Washington, and he said, "I've got it. They're all going." So Chadwick Boseman, just last year, Denzel Washington was receiving an honor, and he spoke, and he said, like, I literally would not be here today if it wasn't for you. Like,
wow.
And that just doesn't mean you paying for me to go to the UK.
Yeah.
It means that you opened doors. Yes. And, you know, we just talked recently about how you watched Glory.
Great movie.
And his performance in that movie. And he's just really one of the best. So Chadwick Boseman then went on to a couple small television series in the late 2000s. And his breakthrough role came in 2013 in the biopic of Jackie Robinson called 42.
I never saw it.
And that's where he was this young guy. This was like his big break. And it worked, obviously. He continued to portray historical figures. So in 2014, Get On Up was about James Brown, and he played James Brown in that. And then in 2017, he played Thurgood Marshall in Marshall. And he then came in 2016, he got the role of Black Panther. And Black Panther was a phenomenon that opening weekend, that whole time that it was out. It was just a phenomenon. And he became synonymous with the powerful black man. And he would do the Wakanda Forever. You know, people would do that. People are still doing it this week and whenever they can. And he then went on to the Marvel comic universe, the MCU, as it's called in that world, and went on to play Black Panther in three other films besides Black Panther, in the biggest film of all time, the most successful film of all time, and the Avengers Endgame. And it's just very sad. I'm kind of halting speaking because this is a very sad thing, and he was such a good guy. He also headlined last year 21 Bridges, which had a very big critical support. And his last film, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, will be scheduled for release at the end of this year, possibly the beginning of 2021, depending on what happens with...
Wait, what is this, a film?
Yeah, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
As in the singer?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Awesome.
Yep.
I have Ma Rainey records.
I want to say it's Octavia Spencer.
It's Ma Rainey. I'm confused.
I might be wrong. Octavia Spencer's Black.
You know, I just thought of really quick another artist that left us knowing that they were going to go that no one knew about had a huge cultural impact on the world, that created masterpieces of art as part of their going out celebration was David Bowie.
David Bowie.
I just realized the connection. I didn't think about it until just now. But how interesting to know that you're how transient you really are, and to be able to focus on what you're doing and create a purpose for that last works of art. It's like, wow.
And David Bowie, the music that he was making when he was dying and knew he was dying, is considered some of his best.
And also stuff we should be listening to right this second, because it's completely fucking relevant. That last album, Black Star?
Black Star.
Oof. I mean, that is some intense visual and lyrics. Anyway.
So I do want to correct myself. And Ma Rainey's Black Bottom stars Chadwick Boseman and Viola Davis. So in 2016, he was diagnosed with colon cancer. He kept it private, like I said, and after a four-year battle, passed away. He raised money for kids with terminal cancer and visited many hospitals and gave so much and was in contact with all these kids that he was always in contact with. And Joe Biden and Kamala Harris paid tribute to Boseman. Biden wrote, "The true power of Chadwick Boseman was bigger than anything we saw on screen. From the Black Panther to Jackie Robinson, he inspired generations and showed them that they can be anything they want, even superheroes." And he really did. He was such a presence, and he was someone who, whenever I saw him, he was dashing, and he was handsome, but you just saw kindness on his face. So Kamala Harris was the subject of Boseman's last tweet a few weeks ago, and his last tweet was a picture of him and Harris and just the word "yes" in capital letters. So Chadwick Boseman is, I believe, will be a legend.
Yeah, I mean, wow, crazy.
Very sad. But now, let's talk about... I may have brought the room down. Why doesn't everybody stand up and stretch? You know
what? I'm just going to take a 5-minute cry break. I'll be right back.
But I'm going to keep the mic.
We'll be after these messages. We'll be right back. How did it go? Okay, never mind.
After these messages, we'll be right back. Do you know what'll change the the room? 3, 2, 1, contact.
Don't touch me.
I said to Tom before we started recording, I said, you know what we should do that we've never done before? We should do a Halloween episode. And he's like, my God, we did like a 2-part, maybe 2 years in a row. And I'm like, oh, really?
Well, speaking of Halloween episodes, and this is not that, but I did, you know, I have declared, I think on like August 15th, I'm pretty sure it was around there, I declared it officially Halloween. Yep. So everybody fuck off. If you're started on September 1st, that's great. Thanks for joining the party. But you're a couple weeks late in my book. And so I started last weekend. I started getting my stuff ready because, you know, here's the thing. Like we were just saying, and I never quite articulated it, so I will repeat it. But what I said to you is, you know, we don't get enough Halloween, right? You only get a month of Halloween.
Yeah.
You get the end of summer with September, and then you get a month of Halloween. The only holiday that anyone likes, the only one where you don't have to go fucking see somebody and deal with their fucking bullshit and eat their crappy food. I'm just kidding.
That is true. It's not a family gathering holiday. Yeah, it's not a Thanksgiving and Easter or Christmas.
Yeah, like you come Hanukkah. And come dress, wear some cool outfit. There you go. This is my life every day. But anyway, so like... It's the only one that people like.
It is.
And so, and then the next thing you know, you have Thanksgiving, which is awful. And then you have Christmas, which is just a fucking nightmare. Like, I'm done with Christmas. I don't give a fuck anymore. I'm done with Christmas. I'm not going to go on a rant about it, but I'm done with Christmas. Christmas, you are being taken over by one more month of Halloween.
Hi, Time Magazine. Could you please take Donald Trump off the cover next week and put in Tom Gallegos with the stamp... Christmas is fucking over.
No, it'll be like, Christmas is for losers.
And suckers.
Losers and suckers. Oh my God, last night I actually said out loud, can you threaten the life of the president on a podcast?
No.
Can I insinuate that that was what I was talking about?
Yes.
So last night I said something to the effect out loud of, You did not. You did not.
You did not.
You did not. You didn't say that. You didn't say that, you vile, fucking, disgusting piece of shit. You didn't fucking say that, you vile fuckface. You didn't. So anyway, I said, I'll personally do it myself. I'll personally do it myself. Point me in the right fucking direction, and I will bring some lemonade. I will bring some lemonade with some extra ice to that man, and we will have a talk about respecting the dead.
I'll make the ice.
Yes.
Give me just a moment.
So anyway, I just started getting my Halloween decorations ready, and I started kind of setting up last night and moving some stuff around and taking the books off the bookshelf to replace it with like my vintage Halloween displays, and I've been collecting little teeny fake candles and like little little lights, little lantern lights and stuff to hang up, and so I have some new decorations this year. And so anyway, I'm just stoked to have September 1st, and I think a lot of people are on board this year. I've noticed September 1st is it. Chris, start, you know, Halloween started. It's ready. Deal with it if you don't like it. I fucking love it. And it's making me feel so good to put all my pretty fall and autumn stuff and all my cool pumpkin-y stuff and my skeletons. And then I found a couple crazy Halloween decorations on the street the other day. And then, I did find one in a tree.
Oh, okay.
About 10 feet up in a tree.
So Tom goes, hey, he has a Swiffer. A Swiffer with just naked, no, nothing else on it.
No, I'm dressed.
You're dressed, but the Swiffer is not. And he has an old wooden, like, straw broom.
Like one like of those, a witch broom.
Like one of those witch brooms, like a hefty one that we use. He has an empty Swiffer, and he goes, come on, you gotta go outside and help me get a body out of a tree. Now, to me, that's just something Tom would say to be funny, right? And I'm like, okay, let's go out and get rid of a body in a tree. And I go outside, and there's literally what looks to be a body in a tree.
It looks like a dead lady in the tree. A dead goth in the tree.
There's a little dead goth in the tree. And I don't know how it was, but it is a little, like, gothy Halloween decoration of a ghostly lady.
Yeah.
But the face looks alarmingly human, even though it's white.
It looks like Pris in Daryl Hannah's character.
I just cracked those literally next to the mic, like, hey.
She looks like Pris, Daryl Hannah's character from Blade Runner. Like, but with like a black mohawk instead.
It was like a black mohawk with long. Like,
her eyes are painted black and her mouth is all painted black. And she looks like my first girlfriend. I was like, she's actually kind of attractive. I thought, I'm like, I'm going to get this woman out of a tree. Eat your heart out, fire department.
And we did. We got... So then we went in and told our friend Larry. I was like, Larry, I really did help him get a body out of a tree.
Well, and then we walked home later, and I carried her by her hand, and people just looked over at us and were like,
you're like, come on, honey.
What? Well, that's what the liberals want. This is what the liberals want.
I started calling her Sigrid. And our friend Larry came in the room, and I said, Sigrid, honey. And he goes, what? Sacred, honey?
So that's her new
and
name.
And so now I just call her Sacred, honey.
Sacred, honey. But yeah, so anyway, loving doing my Halloween decorations and love getting into the fall spirit. It does bring me joy. It has felt, I have felt a little of the autumnal flavor in the air, the leaves on the ground, things are sort of changing. I woke up this morning. I had kind of insomnia last night. I woke up this morning at about 4 o'clock and then woke up again at 4:30 and then basically just sat in bed for an hour until I was like, well, might as well get my day started. Why was I telling you that?
Autumnal in the air.
And it was just beautiful this morning. It's been overcast and really, really smoky from all the fires. Yep. And this morning it was very sunny. The sun was out when it came up this morning.
It's quite a warm day because there hasn't been a lot of sky cover, you know, be it usually you would say cloud cover, but it's smoke and everything mixed here. And it's a warmest day we've had in a long time. It's in this room, man. You know what I did this week? Let's go into, let's make a soft entrance into Hank's Record Corner.
I don't remember if that's how it goes.
It is.
Okay.
Like that. I mean, you know.
I think horn. That was a dun da da, not a dun da 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 da. It was more like a dun da da.
But this week, I did a DJ gig.
Oh yeah.
At your house.
Yeah, that was fun.
Oh my god, it was just it's like
I basically just did errands while I had another human in my home. I was like, this is great. It's like having a dog that plays records for me. I'm just cleaning up my house. You're like, okay, my set's almost done. I'm like, no, please keep going.
And I was like, oh, okay. But that's the beauty. I hope that all of you listening have a friend like we are friends, because we spent all day together at work. We worked together. Then we walk home together. And then I came here for 5 minutes and got my records and went over, and he taught me how to use both of his turntables and to fade and to have transitions. And
so here's the thing, those turntables, I have been teaching people how to DJ on those turntables since 1993 when I got them. I can't tell you how many people have learned the art of DJing on those turntables.
And it was so fun. And like you said, I just played and danced around to the records I was choosing, and then we would chat every once in a while, but Tom would just puttered, and you did dishes, and you cleaned your stove.
I cleaned my stove. Oh, so that's the thing about the stove. Remember, I was like, damn, this fucking cleaner works great. It's just carving this grease off of here. Like, I cleaned that stove in 10 minutes. It was shiny. I was licking it. It was so clean.
Okay.
And then I was like, a lot of residue, though. A lot of residue. Then I read the bottle last night.
Dilute it.
Yeah. Dilute before use. I was like, well, that explains why I don't have any skin on my fucking hand. Like,
like literally 2 gallons of water and a cap full of this stuff. And you're just like, spray, spray, spray.
I was spraying it all over the house. I'm like, wow, it cleans everything. It even takes paint right off the walls.
So, yeah. Well, good, because then you'll have that stuff forever.
Yeah. So I filled it. I filled half the bottle up with water. But, you know, for 99 cents, I mean, it's great.
Good. Well, yeah, so that was just so fun. It was like the sun, you know, the sun was gradually going down, and as I was spinning, and it was picking records, and it's so fun to, like, I picked a bunch of records that I just really wanted to hear.
Yeah.
Right? As opposed to thinking, like, oh, how are these going to connect together? And that's so fun to be able to look at your stack and go, okay, so this is, I started with this. Where do I go from Vanessa Williams' Comfort Zone from 1992 with the very 1992 flute and all that stuff? Where does that take me? And then I had Frida on deck, and I was like, no, this is a set killer. This is a set killer. Yeah. It can be a set ender. It could even be a set starter to kind of like get everyone's attention. But in the middle, it would kill a set. And it was so fun. It was really fun. And so now next time I do it, I am actually going to bring albums now that I know how to like get them there and get them to the right spot and hold them. And it was really fun to have that work to do.
Yeah.
It was fun.
It is work. And, like, you know, you realize how engaged you have to be with DJing. You can't, you don't have a lot of time to talk, and people don't understand that. Like, they'll come up and they'll start talking to me, which is fine. Like, I like chatting with people, but if I chat for someone longer than 45 seconds or a minute, even just in real life, I get very tired of the conversation.
It's true.
No, I'm not able to focus on what I'm doing. And I know it's bad when I realize that I've played 4 or 5 records without paying attention. So that means that I'm not engaged with the music. So it's hard for me. I have to let people know. And I've gotten better about it. I have to let people know these songs are very short, or I'm actually doing something. And, you know, like, people sometimes will come up to the DJ booth and they'll just lean on it and just, like, talk to me, like, as if I'm not really doing anything.
I've done that.
Well, I mean,
but I also know when you're working and I'll go away.
And, you
know,
most people do. Most people see I'm doing something and they'll step back for a second.
And I know to speak to you when you look at me.
Yeah. Also, if you're a beautiful woman, stand at the turntables and talk to me. I'm totally cool with it. I don't have to pay much attention to what I'm doing. It's not really an art form.
Not for you, especially if your name is Sacred Honey. So as we are now past the soft entrance into a hard penetration of Hank's record corner, I want to talk about...
I don't know.
I want to talk about... the first album from General Public, All the Rage. And I think you found this at a thrift store for me.
I may have. I love that album.
It's such a good record. And so General Public was an English band formed by Dave Wakeling and Ranking Roger. Who passed away last year. And it also included former members of Dexy Midnight Runners, The Specials, and The Clash. And that's that thing again where we were talking before about Ranking Roger, right? Yeah. About his involvement in so many bands.
Yes.
And English with Beat. the involvement of Funboy 3 and Bananarama. Ouch. And Dexy's Midnight Runners.
Sorry, I didn't mean to ouch. My elbow just did a thing. Yes.
Ouch.
The Specials, Special AKA, all those bands.
They're all enmeshed.
They're all cousins.
And so they're best remembered for Tenderness, mm-hmm, off of Beautiful this album, song. Which is a great album. But this, is it Day to Day that I love? No, it's Are You Leading Me On. That's another really great song. And so after the breakup of the Beat, which is known as the English Beat here in America, but not there. And I didn't know that. Did you?
Well, because there it is, the English Beat.
Yeah, they're just the Beat.
But I mean, they are known as that there, but.
Well, Wakeling and Rankin Roger were in the Beat. And so they, after that breakup, they were like, well, let's continue. I want to continue making work with you. And so they joined up with Mickey Billingham from Dexy's Midnight Runners, Mick Jones from The Clash, and Horace Panter from The Specials, and the drummer named Stoker, he's from Dexy's Midnight Runners, and The Bureau. Do you know The Bureau?
I don't know.
I think they're very much like Madness in that like early ska
thing. I don't know. I'll look them up.
And so they named the band General Public, and they were signed by Virgin Records in the UK. They recorded and released All the Rage, which is this album right here, in 1984. And so Mick Jones from The Clash, in the middle of recording this, he quit the band. And so he's only on half of the record, and he is listed as one of the group members, although he is not on the album cover. And his replacement, Kevin White, played on the album, finished the album, and then was listed as an official member and is on the cover. So they had a minor hit with General Public, which is on this record, and then they really hit here in America with Tenderness. And so the reason that I really remembered them is because Tenderness is in the original music cut, you know, the fabled music cut of 16 Candles, where now it's not the original music that was in the movie because there weren't contracts signed for a bunch of music. So that's where I remember it. It was also in Weird Science in 1985, and then it was also in Clueless, and that's where they kind of came back in 1995 when Amy Heckerling used their music, and they got back together and did a tour in 94, 95, and 96.
By the way, I remember The Bureau now. We talked about them when we did the Dexy's Midnight Runners episode.
Oh.
That's where they're from.
So it's one of those enmeshed bands again, cousins. But this record is really, really great. And the photos on the front.
That also have Never You Done That. That's the other hit.
I love that song. I actually like that better than Tenderness.
That's a beautiful song.
And then General Public is the last song on this album, but it was the first single that they put out in the UK.
Robbie, my friend Robbie, used to love them. He bought that record, I remember. He loved them.
Yeah, this is a great record. It's a great record just to have on. Yesterday, I was here and I got really stoned and I listened to several Dolly Parton records and really went through every stage of emotions. By myself. The dog was like, could you please get off of me? Please. I'm like, you're comforting me. Like, that's not what I do. So you have been watching something that I remember so fondly, and I remember certain episodes and the way that it was shot and everything from when we were little, and that is What's Happening.
What's Happening? It's a strange show. I bought the first season at the thrift store the other day for a few bucks, and I don't know if you remember it, but it was an all-black cast. Mm-hmm. Came out in 1976. So 1976 or 77, right at the same time Star Wars came out.
So I think it was 77.
I think it is 77.
The other day, yeah.
It's a family that lives in Watts, Watts, LA, yeah. And there's just iconic characters from a childhood, iconic actors and iconic characters. So you have, you know, the son Raj. Thomas, I think, is her last name. So Raj Thomas.
Yep.
And he's the big, tall, skinny guy with the big, you know, super thick frame glasses. Yes. But wears, like, you know, the disco shirts with the bell bottoms and, like, everything. Like, the style is so cool. And then you have Rerun, who Fred Tubbs is the character's name. And he is, like, the big guy that is, like, the amazing, amazing dancer.
Yep.
And then you have D.
Is he a friend? Or
yeah.
Is Rerun a cousin?
He's a friend.
Okay.
He's a neighborhood friend.
Got it. And then D, you said,
and
the
then
little
D,
sister.
Who's the little sister who is just, she just cracks me up. She has such good comedic timing, and her delivery is so flat and so dry, and she just delivers them without the slightest loss of, what do they call it? Like when you remain in character, like, so perfectly, right? Like
you don't break.
You don't break character. Yep. So that's her. She is that temperament throughout the entire show.
She did not go to the Mindy Cohn / Deborah Messing school of comedy,
not.
Where you tell a joke and you smile
and
a little
laugh.
Bit.
No, her thing is keep your face as straight as you fucking can, because then that joke hits hard.
And she was little.
She was little.
And, you know, you sent me a clip the other day with her and Dick Van Patten.
Yes. Oh, my God.
And, you know, the writing is nothing that would be written today on a television network. Nothing. Like, it couldn't be. And I don't know why. Just she said jackass.
Yeah.
It was when she was like 11 or maybe even younger. B.
Multiple times, and, too. That, not in just that one, but like further on in the paragraphs after that scene.
Yeah.
She says it like three or four more. It's the joke continues. The jackass joke continues.
And it's very much like, you're being a stupid white person right now.
Yes.
And very like, boom. And it's funny, yet not funny. And it's powerful. And it's all of those things as we look at it now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But like, one thing that you were saying was that there's a lot of jokes about Rerun size, a lot of fat jokes.
There's tons of fat jokes. In fact, I would say it's about 75%. And I don't know. It's not that part. It's just not funny. That's just not funny to me. It's just not funny to me. That's just my personal. That's just me. That's just like, I'm like, eh. It's like, I don't think jokes about this or that are funny. You know, it's not like maybe I don't think comedy is so.
It is.
It can be what it can be what it is to other people. And so that's.
It is. And right now, though, particularly right now at this moment, we are in a body movement.
And I'm. Yes.
That is different. It's very different than it has been. And it's celebrating, purposely, forcefully celebrating body positivity. I like to call it radical self-acceptance. I think that has a little more of a. To it. I mean, just a week and a half ago, I was, you know, I'm a 50-year-old man, but I was still like on Instagram. I got a message saying, hey, your profile picture should reflect your size. It's not fair for people to have to look at a fat person if they don't want to.
Now imagine that guy trying to throw garbage out of his car. Imagine that's how I felt. I was like, no, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to send this man a message.
Yeah, you were mad. And I got rid of him right away. Like,
I just threatened his life quickly.
I blocked him. I got rid of the message. I wrote him back. And that's my business. But it's like, I can handle that. I'm a big guy. I lost a bunch of weight a few years ago and gained half of it back, but I'm happy where I am. I'm fine where I am. I like being a big guy. But you just can't, like, and the thing is that his intention was that he was helping me.
No, his intention was, you know, his intention was.
No, I'm not. I'm saying he thought in his head, like, well, no, I'm just being cool. Like, you should let people know because you're disgusting. So I didn't want to see that. So it would be helpful in the future if like, you change that.
You should put a trigger warning on it, you know, because it's like violence or like watching a child get murdered, you know. It's you should have a trigger warning on that. And I wasn't expecting that.
There's a beautiful.
Well, you know what, you sick fucking asshole? Why don't you fuck off? What are you looking at men for in here, on here anyway? Well, don't you have a husband or a fucking boyfriend? Get the fuck off my page.
There's a,
I have a lot of swearing today.
You do.
And I really apologize. We have an adult.
We were asked a few weeks ago if our podcast is listenable to children.
And I said, are you fucking kidding me, kid? Get away from me.
And both of us right away were like, no. No, about sticky feelings. Like, oh, there's a lot of things that children should not hear about.
I looked down at that kid and said, and who the fuck are you?
That's what I want. Trixie Mattel. Quote,
normalize.
We need to normalize going up to a child and going, and who the fuck are you? So those jokes, and that's funny because that was just, fat jokes were a thing.
Yeah.
It was a thing in every sitcom. It was just an easy laugh, and he, you know, had a large role in it. And then there's the Raj's very best friend, Dwayne. And he just had the best afro. Mm-hmm. And there's so many cool scenes. I really, right away when you got it, I was like, oh my God, there's an episode with the Doobie Brothers, and Rerun records the Doobie Brothers, and the recorder comes out of his jacket. And I watched that scene the other night on YouTube, and it was like, yeah, I remember sitting in my kitchen and watching this episode.
Well, it's a really interesting show because it's, you know, it's about, like, it's an all-black cast. Essentially the main cast. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it's about this black family growing up in living in Watts, but it's not necessarily race based. And so I find it really interesting because it's not about these people being a black family. It's just a black family. Mm-hmm. It doesn't need to be more than that. And so in that way, I appreciate it. And then I was curious, okay, who created this show? Was it white people? Was it black people? It was white people created it. And then the writers, we looked up the writers the other day, too.
They were all, like,
and
probably at that moment in their late 40s to early 50s, white Jewish men.
And I just think it's interesting. And the fact that it's not race-based in mm-hmm. terms of the situations.
It's very interesting now to be able to look, A, not being a child, and B, being an adult in this time in our country. But look at what's happening, which was a black family, an all-black cast, all of that, working class, living in Watts, struggling, right? There were moments of struggle. Did they paint that?
I mean, they seem to be like a middle-class family, really. They don't, you know, they all have cool clothes. They all, you know, dress really nice.
So that's 1977 to 1979. Okay. Then in 1982 comes The Cosby Show. And that is like,
sorry,
oh my God.
I was just looking for that glass of water.
I know. That's the problem.
It's gone.
That's the problem is that we had such a DEFCON 5 that now we have no water. We actually may have to press pause for a minute.
Sorry, go ahead.
So,
1983.
So then 82 or 83, The Cosby Show comes out, and everyone's like, oh my God, there's never been a show like this. There's never been, it's groundbreaking. Mm. There's, you know why? Because they were upper class. He was a doctor. She was an attorney.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, what's happening, the Jeffersons, all of those things lose because those were people who weren't upwardly mobile people.
I mean, but then the Jeffersons were, but...
Well, they were...
In a different way, I guess.
You know, they moved on up.
Yeah,
you know?
They were not... It almost... Yeah.
And so, you know, these were both college-educated people. And so it's like, now I remember the huzzah that was shown to that show... But there were other shows before that that laid the path.
Yeah. You know, one thing I really like about it is they incorporate a ton of music into it, and they incorporate a ton of performance and dancing as well. And it's, you know, Rerun, I don't know the actor's name, but he is a phenomenal dancer.
His name is Fred Barry.
Fred Barry. Okay. he's just such a great dancer, and but he has just a fucking awesome style. And in my mind, I was like, oh, he's a break dancer. He's a break dancer. But really, he was, you know, 5 years ahead of the curve on the style for that, with the suspenders and the high-waisted pants and the sneakers. Well,
before it became like, known.
Before hip-hop was hip-hop. It was you know, 2 years away from being hip-hop. Like, oh, my God. Oh,
and he wore that red beret all the time. Yeah,
and the red beret. And then, of course, in Breakin', he wears the red beret. The one guy wears the red beret. Also, I kind of like that it has a little sort of a Guardian Angels sort of reference to it.
In that time.
Yeah, in that time, definitely. Another interesting thing, and I've mentioned this name 10,000 times in the podcast, is the creator of the soundtrack was Henry Mancini. Whoa. And it's so funny because he, you know, Henry Mancini, you know, wrote Moon River. Mm-hmm. He did the music for Moon River. He did, you know,
and Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Breakfast at Tiffany's. Like, he did everything, you know, the Pink Panther theme. Like, he's just been doing music for decades and decades. And it's such a funky opening. It is just killer. I remember every note of it the minute I heard it. I was like, oh my God. And the opening scene, they're walking down the sidewalk, you know, playing basketball, and the one, you know, and then Dwayne is like on a skateboard and he slips and he falls and he's like, oh man, you know, and like shakes his head. But so, yeah, the music is really cool. And I love that Henry Mancini, who also did Newhart, I've done Henry Mancini episodes, but like, holy shit, the music is fucking great.
Well, and it's so then, you know, they ran for a couple of seasons and then they came back in 1985 in something that I used to talk about a lot when we were just concentrating on the 80s, which was first run syndication. Mm-hmm. So on Saturday afternoons, What's Happening Now? Was
I don't
on.
Know if I remember that. Maybe I would.
So that when they came back, everyone came back. All five of the main characters, Raj, Dwayne, Dee, Shirley Hemphill.
She's great.
And a rerun. But it was rerun's show. Uh-huh. They brought it back, and it was his show. He was the star of the show. And it lasted a couple seasons. I think they did another, like, 40 episodes.
I probably would remember that if I came across it at the thrift store or something. I would want to see that again, because it does sound really familiar.
You know, Dee is, like, you know, 19 now, you know. It's great. I love her, especially, Dee and Shirley Hemphill. I just told Tom a story, but it seems like I told it on here, but I don't think I did. But so Rosie O'Donnell talks about when she was a teenager, she started working at this club in Long Island and did like a night where it was a Sunday night. So it was all of her friends from high school came because kids could go. And so she said she would make like Mary Lou is dating Doug and da 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 da, and everyone would laugh and she was a huge hit. And the owner said, come on back. And she did, and she bombed. And she was there one day doing another audition before they opened. And that weekend, Shirley Hemphill, who played Shirley on What's Happening.
She's the waitress. She's so funny.
She's like the mean,
I think,
fun.
Maybe not just the waitress. I think she's the owner.
Owner of the diner.
I think she's the owner of the restaurant, yeah.
And she became very big on this show. But she was a stand-up. And she came through and she went into the owner's office after she saw Rosie O'Donnell, 16 years old. She said, little one, come with me. Come back with me. And went back and said, this little one's going to open for me for the four shows, and she's going to get $25 a show. And Rosie O'Donnell was like, oh my God, $100. I'm going to get $100. I am the richest person in the world. Like 1977, right? 1979. And when Shirley Hemphill was it, right? When she was it, she's going to get $25 a show. That's a lot of money, right? And so she says that she bases her success in her career on Shirley Hemphill giving her an opening spot.
Wow.
At this Long Island Comedy Club one weekend in like 1979.
I remember watching Shirley Hemphill. Was she on, what was the comedy show that was on like Sundays at 7 with the brick background?
Evening at the Improv.
Yeah, so was she on there?
I'm sure she was.
Because I remember.
Everybody was.
God, everyone.
It's the first place I ever saw Jim Carrey do his weird, super, super weird, subversive weird comedy. I saw her on there. It's the first place I ever saw Stephen Wright.
Did you ever go there? Have you ever been there?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, because there were a lot of, like, Monday nights at the Improv in L.A., on La Cienega was back when I was in the business, like an industry night where you would go and you would watch up and comers.
That's reminds me of Louis. I liked the behind the scenes aspect of, I mean, with all that show, we've talked about it, but with all that show means the comedy community. And how they go to shows like that. I think it's interesting. It reminds me of how DJs go to other shows to see other DJs.
Well, and to talk about, we have talked about this before, but like Louis C.K. did what he did, you know, the cancellation, everything. But I will address the show that he created. That show talked about things that other comedies didn't talk about. You know, there's an episode where this kid is mean to him, heckles him at the Cellar in New York, and he follows him home to go yell at him and to go yell at the parents on why they raised a kid like this. And he gets there and he, or, you know, to go yell at him. Then he realizes that it's his parents, you know, it's this kid's parents' house. And then he realizes that then the kid's going to get in trouble. Then he goes in and has coffee with with the parents. And it's like this whole thing. Or he dates this girl and they're walking down and she like is going to hold his hand. And he kind of goes and she's overweight. Mm. And he wrote this great monologue for this wonderful actress, Sarah Winter, maybe. And about like, hey, man, like I am what I am. Like if you're going to be one way with me inside and one way outdoors, and that's I don't need that. You know, just kind of telling him. And then there's a beautiful scene that I know we've talked about before between him and Joan Rivers.
Yeah.
Where he's complaining about being in the garden room instead of being at the in the big room. And she's like, listen, garden room, I will take a garden room, I'll take a basement room. Whatever gig I have, I'm going to take.
But the interesting thing about that scene, and I know we have talked about it before, is that she's so human and matter-of-fact about it. There's no character behind it. It's her true self. It's the person that you know she is when she's not being Joan Rivers or was, when she is at home by herself and in her world. That's who she is. And so that's why it had such an impact on me. One, as an artist taking gigs, but just the sincerity of that scene. The sincerity of that scene really. And, I love that.
And he was too. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He was listening to Joan Rivers. Mm-hmm. He wasn't listening to the character. He was listening to this woman that he respected, I'm sure, and everyone did. And, you know, like she, her main thing was, you know, when she was alone, I was lucky enough to know her a little bit, a good bit. And when she was alone, all she thought of was the next booking. Mm-hmm. Why is December 24th empty? I could go to that casino. I could go that. Why is it? And what are we going to, where are we going to fill it? Who are we going to fill it with? I need that filled. She just thought about work and jokes constantly. But so I will say, like, hanging out at the Improv a lot, because we would go pretty much every Monday, in a thing that I tried and then didn't pursue because I got a job in the industry, and like being with comics, people that I wanted to be and things that I wanted to pursue before, was,
and all we got was this lousy podcast.
And all we got was this lousy podcast where I make jokes and I hope one of you laughs.
It's usually just me.
I'll make Baxter listen to it later and go, laugh! Laugh!
Put a bungee cord around the back of his head and pull his fangs back so it looks like he's smiling.
Laugh at the clown! I'm working as hard as I can! So what's happening? I'm glad that you're
happening? Oh yeah, what's happening?
I'm glad that you got it. Another one that I do want you to keep an eye out for, and something that I watched about 15 years ago, was Maude.
Yeah, definitely.
The first season of Maude alone, just because they were coming in with guns blazing so hard, at a time very much like we're in right now. It was the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. The nation was completely divided. The right and the left, very vitriolic, violence in the streets, very much like now.
So Make America Great Again, that's what that whole thing meant.
Uh-huh, to bring it back to Nixon times.
Oh, that's fucking awesome. I get it now.
Now you get it.
You know
now
what?
You get it.
Where's my mega hat?
Yeah, where is that ballot? I put it somewhere. So, Maude, just like I said, in that first season, you know, her adult daughter who is divorced and has a child lives with them. She's dating a married man. Maude has an abortion in like the fourth episode. And so, you know, her, and then so Maude's cousin is Edith Bunker. Mm-hmm. Because Maude, they used her a few times on as Archie's foil. She was like the liberal foil. And then, but yeah, Maude is B. Arthur and Rue McClanahan.
It's crazy how they can be the same person.
Both of them.
How do they fit into the costume?
It was like the Olsen twins. So,
like, do they just put them back to back and they just flip them around?
Depending who was fussy, the other one would go.
So it was usually Rue.
It was usually Rue.
Speaking of Funko Pops.
Yeah, yep.
They are releasing a limited edition Walt Disney Funko Pop.
I know.
And it looks fucking awesome. And he's wearing a gray suit with his black tie. And it looks like me. Like, it's him in like 1966, probably right before he died. So he's got gray hair. And I just like looked at it and I was like, wow. And then I realized that it was going to be a limited edition. And I was like, you fucking punks. You fucking punks. Really? You can't make 10 billion of them. You can make 20 of them and sell them for $5 billion. But so anyway, I'm going to get one. One way or another.
It's not listed yet.
No, it's not. I don't think it's coming out until the anniversary next year.
Yeah, it's not listed yet.
Of Disneyland, I mean.
Oh, so last night, I only got literally like 8 minutes in, but I'm going to finish it today. I texted you and said, have you seen... And I wanted to preface it so you knew exactly what I was talking about. So I said, have you seen Walt Disney's The Black Cauldron?
Yeah, I've never seen that one.
So it's from 1985. It's like a Lord of the Rings type thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But in Disney animation. And I think animation in the 80s for Disney is kind of the lost era, right?
It's an interesting era. There was a lot happening. That's when they started experimenting with CGI. Not in that film, but, you know, for Aladdin and... what was the other one? When did Beauty and the Beast come out?
Beauty and the Beast came out later. In like 90,
yeah.
90, 91, like winter of 91. And then 92, I think, or 93 was Aladdin. So they were being made in the late 80s.
Yeah. But. And then Lion King in 94. So that's kind of, I guess that was like the 80s was the like the last of the hand-drawn era.
So The Little Mermaid came out in 89.
Okay, yeah.
And that's considered like the start of the Renaissance.
Yes.
Right? Little Mermaid, then...
Which I'd never heard
Beauty
of.
Beauty and the Beast.
The Disney Renaissance. I never knew that was a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the 70s, like the 80s, really, kind of they made a lot of the TV stuff, but they didn't make any significant... animated.
The 80s films are all very strange. I think Oliver and Company is another one that's very strange. Rescuers Down Under also came. Maybe Rescuers Down Under was early 90s. But anyway, the 80s ones are all strange. I haven't seen them all, but I have been collecting them.
So, yeah, I can't wait to finish it. I looked last night and I was like, I'm going to look at things that I haven't seen before. I know that they'd be interesting even if I don't. Particularly like, oh my God, that was the greatest.
I finished Corpse Bride last night,
yes.
Which I haven't seen since it came out. And that movie, man, boy, that really, it hit me hard. It's so beautiful. I forgot how absolutely amazing and just, it's brilliant. The writing is brilliant. The story, you know, again, it's a Tim Burton creation. Tim Burton directed it with another director.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
I'm going to look it up real quick.
I didn't even realize Emily Watson does the voice of...
I was just going to ask.
Of the love interest, his girlfriend that he falls in love with in the mortal world. And Helena Bonham Carter does the voice of Emily, my dream girl. I'm in love with Emily, by the way. So if you know Emily, if you know any women with old... crusty wedding dresses with worms crawling out of their faces that are half bones, send her my way.
So Mike Johnson is the other director, and he's a stop motion director.
So Mike Johnson also did all the stop motion for James and the Giant Peach. He did stop motion for Nightmare Before Christmas. Paranorman. He did Coraline.
He did a video, oh my gosh, a video that I'm sure you know, by Primus.
Oh,
for yeah. The Devil Went Down to Georgia.
Yeah.
And it's all stop motion. He did that.
I found that out just yesterday. I did not know. I love that video. It's a great video. I mean, obviously, it's a great song, too. I mean, they really, as far as covers go, Primus nails it. They fucking hammer that cover. Fucking hammer it. It's so good.
There's also a kind of a beloved late 90s, I think it was two seasons, maybe on Fox, but it was called The PJs, and it was Eddie Murphy, and it was really fun stop motion.
Oh, I remember that.
And he's behind that, too.
Oh, yeah, and he plays the dad. He plays the grumpy dad. Okay. Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, so he did that. So he's very prolific.
He's very prolific, and he's working on a new project with Jordan Peele right now, working on a new stop motion thing. So he has basically been hired by Disney now to be the sole stop motion animator. Anyway, I just fell in love with this movie. It's so emotionally rich. It's very, very, very romantic. Of course, Danny Elfman does the music for it, so the soundtrack is unbelievable. I'd say it rivals his finest work, which is Nightmare Before Christmas. I would love to do a thing about Danny Elfman sometime in Oingo Boingo. I remember the first time I heard Oingo Boingo was in junior high in 1981. And a friend of mine had an Oingo Boingo t-shirt, and it was the one, I can't remember the title of the album off the top of my head, but it's the one of the Boy Scout walking that's like half of skeleton. Mm. But he always, Danny Elfman always had that real dark edge to some of his songs, and that real macabre intensity. And he has simply taken that and elaborated on it. And he is just The Nightmare Before Christmas. I had been listening to that album for weeks and weeks and weeks. I bought the vinyl off of eBay a few months ago, and it just sits next to my turntables. I listen to it almost every night, and yeah, it's great. If anyone out there has a copy of the Corpse Bride vinyl,
ooh,
that's selling for a mere $499, you let me know. I'll trade you for it. Although I did find Edward Scissorhands soundtrack.
But on vinyl?
When I started researching Danny Elfman's filmography, I was astonished. There are things I had no idea that he worked on that I know so well. I mean, obviously he's done every Tim Burton film.
Yep. Simpsons.
I mean, the guy is just a non-stoppable talent. I can't even imagine what he does. All the singing, all the writing, the orchestration, like, he is just... Anyway, I'm going to go listen to it when I get home.
He, so there's a really horrible show that's just horrible, and I watch both incarnations of it. It's not horrible, it's fine. It's called 911, starring Angela Bassett, Peter Krause. And the music is ding, 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 ding. It's Danny Elfman.
Mm.
Like, he just does, he'll be like, okay, and then... Who contributed to the music and took care of all the music and gathered all the music and was the soundtrack coordinator of Stranger Things?
Mm, there you go.
Listen to the beginning of that. That's all Elfman, and it's so signature him, too. Yeah, he's great. And even if you don't know who he is, you've listened to his music in every single... I'll look more, but like the cars that... Transformers that transform all the music in the Transformers is Danny Elfman. Like, he does big and little. He's best known for that certain type of thing that he does for Burton, though.
Yeah. Beautiful music.
I love it. Well, you know what? It's about that time.
Okay, here we go.
Fight Club.
Do we keep recording or do we end it?
No. I brought a roll of quarters to put in my fist.
I brought a hammer with nails in the end. Uh-oh. I've locked boots. My boots are locked. I'm good.
You've heard of knockin' boots? Now here comes DJ Tom LG with lockin' boots. All right, everyone. Well, this has just been a roller coaster of emotion. It's about 90 degrees in here now.
I made it through this whole episode without crying once.
I
cried before I started talking.
You did. And I cried a little bit.
Oh, dogs. He's trying to wear your robe.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. We love you so much. Stay safe, stay sane, and be kind. Stay kind.
Yeah. Stay rad.
Or smoke the kind, man.
Be kind if you want, but if not, get away. Get out of my fucking face.
And stay awesome.
Bye. But wait, so do we say, you say, and then bye.
So stay awesome.
Stay rad.
Bye.
Okay, that's how we do it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Should we do it for real?
Okay.
Stay rad.
3, 2.
Bye.
So, wait, now?
I'm shutting it off.
Okay.
Bye.